powerful is the Cox Network. So powerful that one day, the internet will let your doctor perform miracles from thousands of miles away.
Connecting to remote operating room.
Giving a whole new meaning to the term house call.
Operation complete.
The Cox Network. With gig speeds everywhere, it's internet built for tomorrow, today. Cox, bringing us closer. In Cox serviceable areas, speeds vary and are not guaranteed. Cox terms apply. Other restrictions may apply.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to Frog Watch with your one and only host who is the most...
Progzilla, bringing you the best progressive music has to offer.
Welcome back once again for another exciting episode of Prog Watch. This week I've got a lot of great interview material with Peter Jones of Tiger Moth Tales lined up, but due to certain restrictions in certain markets, I couldn't make the whole show out of it. But anyway, I decided to bookend it with a couple of other things. So first up, I'd like to play something from you from a brand new band. It's kind of a super group. It's called... K-I-A-M-A. I'll spell it first because I was looking on the internet trying to figure out how to pronounce it, and I see that it's actually a place in New South Wales, Australia, so I thought, crikey, it's probably Kiama. But with further research, I found that the possibility exists that it's pronounced Kiama. So anyway, it's K-I-A-M-A, and as I said, it is kind of a super group. It features Rob Reed from Magenta, Andy Edwards from Frost, Luke Machin from Machine and the Tangent. Machin, M-A-C-H-I-N, not sure how to pronounce it. And Dylan Thompson from Shadow of the Sun. Anyway, their debut album was called Sign of Four. It was just released, and I really enjoyed it very much, so I hope you're going to like this. I'm going to play a song from the album called Tears. Once again, that was Tears by K-I-A-M-A, Kiama, Kaima, from their album Sign of Four, in the four is an IV. Anyway, as I said, I enjoyed that album very much, and I can highly recommend it. But here I'm going to get into the Peter Jones feature, because I have a whole lot of interview material, and I'm going to play three tracks, but they're all really long ones. Pete Jones lost his sight at an early age and quickly latched onto music as a big part of his life. He was playing piano at the age of four and turned his love of music into one of his primary focuses. In his school years, he participated in school plays, music festivals, and concerts. And in 1988, he won the junior final of the BBC's Song for Christmas competition. After school, Pete formed the pop duo Two to Go with his friend, singer Emma Payne. The pair spent the next 10 years or so playing pop covers on the Nottinghamshire circuit, and they were finalists in the BBC's Star for a Night in 2001 and ITV's The X Factor in 2004. The duo toured in the National Arena X Factor tour in 2005 also. So Pete's been around a while, but just recently turned his focus to more progressive music. But he talks a little bit more about that in the interview. But before we get into the interview, I wanted to give you a little bit of music first. From Cocoon, the first Tiger Moth Tales album. This is called A Visit to Chigwick.
Welcome the train. brave soldier boys to protect us, marching on the parade ground.
Time. Why does it make me sad? How can you miss what you've never had? Was there ever such a place? Is there a way we can go back in time to the quiet little town in my mind? One day we ride that train.
So once again, that epic was A Visit to Chigwick by Peter Jones, his project Tiger Moth Tales, from the debut album Cocoon in 2014. At this point, I'm going to play some of the interview. If you want to fill us in a little bit, I understand that you used to be, you've been in music for a long time, but you've only recently come over to the prog side, as it were. You want to tell us a little bit about all that?
Yeah, sure. Well, I've been sort of playing music since I can remember, really, since I was a kid. I started playing piano when I was about, I don't know, three or four or something like that, playing it at friends' houses who had pianos, and then eventually I got my own, and yeah, went from there, really. And all my life, I kind of, I don't know why, but I had this kind of, this inbuilt feeling that I was going to sort of become a, well, what we used to call pop singers back in the, back, back in the day. But
yeah, yeah, so yeah, a few so, of us so actually I, do it, though, you know.
Yeah, so I always kind of was into the pop stuff, and but that said, I was also into prog from, what, I don't know how early people usually get into prog, but I remember getting into some War of the Worlds at about age 9, and then shortly after that getting into early Genesis stuff, more by accident than anything else. But yeah, so to fast forward a few years, I did the usual stuff, and then, you know, school plays and bands in school and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, I formed a duo, and we left school and planning to have a gap year where we'd go and do some gigs, which turned into a gap 15 years.
15, wow.
So I never did get to uni. That's what we did. The duo was called Two To Go, and me and a friend of mine, and we did the what they call the working men's clubs in the UK, and did the X Factor as well, which is documented possibly too well. So yeah, we did all that stuff, and we kind of still with that kind of thinking that we were going to kind of break into the pop market in some way, which, you know, who's to say, we may well have done under different circumstances, but that's how it goes. And I started my own solo career, started writing. I mean, I've written songs since I was a teenager, but started to actually do some work on the solo stuff, and I released an album back in 2010. And yeah, various ventures sort of were tried, and didn't quite sort of reach the where we wanted to be for whatever reason. And I think a lot of it is to do with what I thought of as being the pop industry as a kid has changed quite dramatically in the last sort of 20, 25, 30 years.
Sure.
So the prog thing actually sort of came about as a result of me basically getting pretty disillusioned with everything else that we'd been trying to do sort of for the last 10, 12 years. And I got writer's block as well. I couldn't write anything. For about a year, I just wrote hardly anything. And what I did write, I didn't have much faith in. And getting into the prog stuff was a kind of various things that kind of kicked it off. One of them was seeing Francis Dunnery do a house concert. Progzilla's very own Francis Dunnery.
Right. He just signed up, right, recently.
Yeah, so seeing him do a house concert, then getting into sort of It Bites and stuff, and then followed, you know, on from that was Big Train, and then came Frost, and various things kind of got me into listening to prog again. And I just had this crazy idea one day when I couldn't write anything at all, and I thought, let's just sit down and write whatever comes out, you know, set the tape recorder running, just have a jam with the guitar and see what happens. And one of the first things that happened was a very rough sort of short, well, the first couple of verses of A Visit to Chigwick.
Okay.
And that was one of the first things that came out, and it kind of all went on from there. And it's a bit of an old story, but the prog was always there. It just wasn't what I ever envisaged doing something particularly with myself. But we all have these kind of life changes, don't we? So yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so
sort of opened the floodgates, though, right? I guess, you know, sounds like a good thing if you had writer's block and then all of a sudden, you know, decided just let it happen, and Tiger Moth Tales ends up is what happens. And I wish I was that lucky, you know, to just let some stuff happen and have that come out.
Well, the thing is, when you write a song, which is basically about, I don't know how much of Trumpton or Camboyet Green you'd be aware of in the States, but probably not a lot. But the problem I had was I'm now glad I stuck to my guns, but the first initial reaction was, what the hell are you going to do with a song about a kids' TV show? So
yeah,
my first thought was that I'd gone, you know, I totally flipped my lid, and that it was pointless, and I nearly kind of got rid of it, and something made me revisit it. And I think it was more of an experiment, really, that Cocoon happened in the first place. And I've said this before, I don't think I ever really planned to release it as such. It was just something to get down onto a bunch of WAV files and sort of keep as a sort of, you know, experimental project that I'd done. But, well, hey, let's just say I'm very glad that some people persuaded me to go ahead and put it out there, because it's been, you know, it's been fantastic.
Well, I'm glad too, and I'm sure some of our listeners are as well.
Howdy, my name's Morgan, and I've been a fan of progressive rock music since I was doing the old Easy Reader bits on the Electric Company. Well, I remember the first King Crimson and Gentle Giant albums like they were yesterday, but I digress. But if you're a fan of progressive rock music, you're not going to want to miss a single episode of Prog Watch. It's phantasmagorical. Tell them Morgan sent you.
Yeah, there's a bit of like a whimsical side to all that kind of stuff that I really do enjoy. You know, some of it, like the Three Billy Goats Gruff kind of thing you did on the latest one. Well, I really enjoyed that with all the farm noises and the Billy Goat voices. And, you know, even on the first album, you know, the story about the witches on the island and all that. It's all like very, you know, story oriented kind of stuff.
Yeah, I kind of consider myself as a bit of a stowaway in many aspects. I mean, I've described myself as a stowaway DJ on the ship Progzilla, but also, I mean, I think I'm a bit of a prog stowaway in some respects, because I kind of use it as a vehicle to try out basically anything I feel like doing. And I know that you could say that's the very point of progressive music. But,
yeah, I have said that, but, I think.
but you know, I do. I'm really into sort of comedy and radio dramas and stories and literature and stuff in general. So I use prog as a sort of as a vehicle for getting into any crazy recording hijinks that I fancy doing at the time. So right. Sometimes, you know, I can understand how. I mean, I'm really glad you like. A Kid's Tale and stuff like that. You know, I'm very glad, and a lot of people seem to enjoy it. But you do get some proggers who are very, very serious about the music and would rather, you know, probably rather I didn't mess around so much. But
oh, heck with that!
There's the breaks.
Yeah, that's tough. I love it. I think it's really good stuff. And yeah, oh, boy, you know, you're so. You know what, you write on guitar. I know you're a keyboard player as well. How much of all the instrumentation in that did you really do on these albums?
Yes, I've done everything. That is to say, it's all, you know, the drums aren't real. Some of the other instruments, like this, the bass isn't actually real either. Which again, some people don't really enjoy, you know, having this sort of the program. Well, I don't program them, I play them on the keyboard, but yeah, it was all done by me in a sense. So I mean, the guitars are done properly, the sax is done properly, all the keyboards and stuff like that, and then there's the odd funny little instruments that I've just used, like there's the Irish whistles, and then there's sort of odd things like the or different things, I say, like the Indian sarod, which I played on Tigers in the Butter, and a little sort of zither type instrument that I've got, which I used on a couple of the tracks. And then, yeah, like on Beauty Sleeps, I played nylon guitars, which is something I've not done on a track for a long time. So I just basically grab whatever sort of in the studio. I mean, I say studio, it's a back bedroom. So
yeah, that's what my studio is, an old bedroom. All my kids moved away, so this is now Prog Watch Studios, and where I do my own little music project. I moved all my instruments and my computer and all that up here.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't know about you, but mine tends to get, if I don't keep it in check, it tends to get into an awful state, and it's like sort of some kind of black hole.
Wires everywhere. Yeah, I hear you.
so sometimes it's literally a case of sort of delving into the big box that's underneath the the mixing desk and thinking, oh, I haven't used this for a while. I forgot I even had this. Let's
cool. that's great. That's so great. I really love it. Just that whole approach. I've always said prog is supposed to be about why not. It's not supposed to be any certain thing. It's the music that says, why not? You know, why not do this? Why not do that? Why not put this instrument there? Why not have a nice long instrumental break here, you know, instead of having to think that you have to go along some kind of cookie cutter little pop song format or something like that.
Well, the thing is, it's so difficult at the moment, I think, because we are, I mean, people have said that we are saturated at the moment in the market. And I kind of, well, I don't know if I say saturated, but there is a hell of a lot of stuff coming out. And the thing is, I don't think that any of it is bad, if that makes sense. Obviously, as a bit of a DJ now, I kind of listen to even more than I used to.
And I'm with you. I think a lot of it is really good, and I'm not like a super critic about picking things apart. You know, I like it. I know what I like, and stuff that sounds like that, that's what I like, you know?
So, but it's a fine line, because people sort of don't like the bands that go down the well-trodden path, you know, and kind of trying to tend to do stuff like that sounds very Genesis. You know what I mean? People, certain bands kind of go down what you might call a more traditional route of prog. And some people don't like that because they think it's a cliche of
retro
of,
whatever
of something that was in the 70s and stuff like that. But then if you stray sort of too far along the path and start doing something that's either avant-garde or, in my case, just plain silly, you know, some people don't like that either. So it is
tough.
A fine line to walk.
I get your point. I'm going to stop here and play another song. This is called "Tigers in the Butter." This is also from the first Tiger Moth Tales album, Cocoon, released in 2014. And afterward, Peter will talk a little bit about it, and we'll play some more of the interview.
Thank you. Oh,
Tags in the Butter is got a strange name, and it gets its name from two or three different sources, one of which is a story where tigers turn into butter.
Sure, Little Black Sambo. I guess that's fallen out of favor these days because people find it to be racist. But I remember that book, yeah.
I can't say what it's called, but that's the, yeah, that's the
yeah.
one. Yeah, I mean, I had the tape, the cassette of those stories, you know, and just obviously never even thought anything of it. And then all of a sudden sort of it became... Not the thing to say.
Yeah, well, he tricks all the tigers into like chasing each other around a tree, and they melt into butter at the end of the story.
And then they make pancakes.
Right. Yeah, his mother makes pancakes. Yeah.
So it kind of partly came from that, and also from another piece that I'd been involved in with a couple of lads about, 15, 20 years ago, and that was called Tigers and Butterflies. So it's kind of an amalgamation of those two things. And, yeah, I mean, tigers turning into butter was just an image from, a concept from my childhood that stuck out as a very, you know, random sort of thing that would only happen in a children's book.
Yeah.
And just an image that came to me while I was doing it. And plus I'd been sort of heavily into Indian music in 2012, particularly. I was heavily into Indian classical music, and that's when I bought my Sharod. So tigers, India, and all that
rest
of it just kind of came together in one. I often find that I end up mixing quite different ideas to come up with a sort of common theme. So the theme of it is all about remembering. Or even going back in time to sort of relive the childhood days. And Cocoon is all about childhood and childhood experiences.
Sure.
And then later, sort of growing up to regret, you know, the loss of childhood, because I think for most of us it does kind of... There is a point where we're that anxious to be thought of as having grown up and being, you know, being a man or whatever. And then there is that point where we stop wanting to be thought of as kids, and everything takes over, responsibilities take over, you end up, you know, growing up and getting your own place and getting a job and blah, blah, blah. Right. And I think, well, for me, certainly, I may be alone in this, but for me, there was definitely a point where I suddenly went, bloody hell, you know, I lost something.
I didn't really want to grow up. I always envied Peter Pan. I think I would have been Peter Pan if I could have.
It was,
I get what you're saying, you know. Yeah, we spend so much time striving for things, you know, the next thing, or I can't wait for 3 weeks until I go on vacation or what. And it's like you're wishing your life away in some cases. It's like you got to stop and appreciate what you have. And sometimes I think you don't appreciate it until it's gone and you are grown up. Mm-hmm. And then you're looking back saying, boy, I had it easy as a kid. I should have had more fun. Yeah. I should have just been in the moment more and just enjoyed it, you know. Instead of wanting to be all grown up, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's the line that reoccurs, we live our lives in fantasy. And I think that in various ways we do, because when we're kids, we live our lives in fantasy of imagination all the time and creating scenarios and, you know, when we're playing and stuff. And, you know, I always remember playing Lord of the Rings and that kind of fairly geeky type stuff. But, you know, or Doctor Who or whatever, you know, just getting, you know, imagining that, you know, different concepts. And, you know, you live your life in fantasy in that aspect. And then when you get older, you kind of live it in fantasy as well, because you never, like you're saying, you never... I mean, I find that I'm forever either looking forward to stuff or worrying about upcoming stuff. And then after it's gone, I kind of look back on it and go, "Oh, wasn't that quite fun?" You know, I very often find I'm not really, I'm not remembering things as they're happening and living in the moment because I'm too worried about what's coming and then thinking about what's been. So it is, I think it is true, in a kind of, I mean, I wouldn't, you know, I'm not, I'm certainly not a philosopher. I can't say the word. philosophical person.
Philosophical.
And I'm not profound in any way either, you know, but I think we do kind of stumble upon these things.
I think there is some profundity. Is that the right word? In what you're doing, as far as realizing that, and a lot of your work seems to tie in with the themes that so many of us were so quick to want to get away from, all the childhood kind of things. That's part of what's been drawing me to some of the work. You know what I mean?
Well, that's good. I mean, I really like that people are kind of getting into that, because it kind of affirms my belief that it makes me think, oh, it's not just me that's a bit weird. You know,
we're all a bit weird, Peter.
Other people want to get into it. And
so I don't know. I don't know if all the listeners know that you are blind. Is that something that you're comfortable talking about? I can edit it out if you don't want to. I didn't know how to approach the subject with you.
No, I'm fine to talk about that. That's fine, yeah.
Okay, which to me, it just makes it even more fascinating what you're doing. I wonder what's the technology like where you're able to get on the computer and do all these things? Even just this, that we're doing the Skype thing, you know, when I think about if I couldn't see, you know.
I kind of grew up in the generation which I think we may well be seeing the last of it now, I think, in that technology has kind of come on so much since I was a kid. I mean, obviously we had gadgets and stuff like that when we were kids, and we had help and support and stuff. But the, for instance, you mentioned Skype. I mean, I use a regular laptop, but it has what we call a screen reader, which basically, well, it reads the screen and tells you what you're doing. It's just a voice. It's not voice controlled. It's just a voice that speaks to you. Have on the Macs and stuff like that. So, yeah, so that's how we do a lot of the computer stuff, going online and operating programs, and some websites and some programs work better than others, just depending on how compatible they are with the screen readers, which have a hell of a job to do to try and keep up with everything. But that's how I do sort of a lot of computer stuff. And I think, but going back to what I was saying earlier about a generational thing, that there were a lot of things when we were growing up that we just kind of had to learn how to do. Like, for instance, things like, I mean, this is getting very cliched, but kind of phone numbers and things like that, remembering phone numbers. And I remember, you know, just the fact that I would remember fairly large quantities of phone numbers, which now none of us have to do, you know. And
right, I still remember my phone number from 35 years. I'm like that. A friend of mine, you know, where he lived in 1985, I remember his phone number. I just have a head that just retains all these numbers and mostly useless stuff. But I used to be really good at Trivial Pursuit.
I mean, I guess it's the same. You know, some people would argue it's the same for visual. That's the same for people with sight as with people without sight. But then again, it's a lot easier to write a number down on a pad than to go and get a Perkins Brailler and write it down on that.
It's more
natural.
But yeah, I understand.
What I'm getting
down
to in my very long-winded way is that in regards to the actual recording of the albums, thus far, all the Cocoon and Storytellers and the recent Wassail song EP have all been done using a combination of an old 8-track tape recording system and some digital programs like Goldwave and even Audacity, which is a fairly basic program, but it's accessible to blind people using screen readers. So something that's amazed me about all this, this prog business, the prog sector of my life, is that I've been able to record Cocoon basically using this really old it's a cassette-based system.
8-track cassette.
Yeah, and if you tell that, you know, again, if you tell some people, if you tell them that, they will kind of automatically wonder whether it should be redone on a better system or. But the thing about
it sounds good. Well, who cares, right? You know.
Well, I mean, you know, if you know what I mean, if it were to be redone, then it would undoubtedly sound better in a technical sense, you know, like,
yeah.
You know, you wouldn't, you're not going to see Dave Kirzner putting his next album out on an 8-track cassette recorder.
But I'll tell you what, though, Peter, I mean, you know, I listen, whenever I listen to this stuff, I usually end up listening on my iPod or I burn stuff onto a disc, listen in my van on the way to and from work, you know, I'll be listening to all kinds of stuff. I wouldn't have guessed that your albums were done on old 8-track cassette technology. Not at all. Sound fantastic.
It's very gratifying to hear you say that, and it's also very gratifying like that people such as Colin Tench, don't you, from Corverstone.
Yes, I'm friends with him on Facebook. Yep,
he's written some absolutely wonderful reviews of Storyteller and Cocoon, in which he's actually taken the time to compliment me on the sound and the mixing and stuff like that. And I find that given how some people have reacted in the past, you know, knowing how I've recorded stuff, I find that so nice that he's actually done that. And it does mean an awful lot. It's not for want of, you know, it isn't because I don't want to go onto a digital system.
Right.
I do actually kind of want to upgrade. And that's one of my big plans for this year, to upgrade to a system that I can use. It was just that Cocoon came along at a time when I was still using the old gear, and that's, you know, that's how I recorded it, not knowing if I would ever release it. And once it had been done, I thought, well, I've got it sounding the way I want it now, so I don't see the point in going and spending thousands of pounds in studio time to reproduce what's been done. So it wasn't, you know, it's not like I'm going out of my way to sort of record stuff in a lo-fi manner.
It's no, it's out of necessity. Yeah, I mean, I had actually wondered, you know, as a blind person, how were you, you know, because I know what I do on the computer, and I was wondering how all that would work if you were there recording by yourself, because it seemed like you did so many of the instruments and things. How was that all working out for you? To find that you're doing it on tape, it almost makes more sense because it's more tactile, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I've been planning and trying to go over to digital for many years now, and what always kind of holds me back is the fact that I know that I can do stuff so easily on the old system. You know, it's almost like it's just second nature to mix and record in that way. And I find that anything that slows down basically the creative process can distract me to the point where I just think, oh, sod it, and I can't be bothered to do it. You know, I'm
right.
So the problem is, I am looking for a system, and there are systems that blind people use, such as on the computers where the screen readers can help them and stuff like that. And this is something I need to look into. And what I don't want to be doing is talking to you again in a year's time, having just released another album on the 8-track, because, let's say, not that I've got a problem with it, or not that I regret it in the slightest. It's just that it does have its limitations, and especially, I mean, you can't get the tapes these days. You know?
Yeah, exactly. I worked on reel to reel back in the day. It did become hard to find the tape. Yeah, but that's really fascinating to me. It really is. I applaud you, and you know, you wouldn't want anything to get in the way. You know, that's one of the things that was cool about getting my studio together, was one of the barriers to wanting to do something was then, well, then I got to go here and get this, and I got to go, you know, and everything was all scattered everywhere. And you'd be like, oh, like you said, sod it, you know.
Yeah.
To have it all in one room, you know, to have it in a setup that you're familiar with and that you understand and you can operate yourself. You know, I can understand where you're coming from with that.
Yeah.
Hopefully, you know, you can learn, if that's what you really want to do, learn how to do it a new way, but not have it become any kind of barrier, because I think what you're doing is fantastic. It's I wouldn't want you to find it to be a drag to record music, you know, because I'm enjoying what you're doing very much.
Oh, thank you. It's something that I think is only going to get more difficult and worrying the older and older I get. So I think, well, to be honest, even if it means having to buckle down and sort of grit my teeth and bear it for a few months, then, you know, it'll hopefully be worth it in the end, whatever that new system may be. So
very cool.
That's the plan.
Hello, good morning, good evening. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Radio Progzilla, which is being dishing you up red-hot progressive stuff, and it's 24/7.
And I wanted to stop things once again here and play another piece of music. This is from the latest Tiger Moth Tales album, Storytellers Part 1, and this is The Piper.
I am the Pied Piper, this is my pipe, the magic we work is strong. My music I'll play, and lead them away, and a shilling a rat is the price of my song.
A shilling a rat? I'm not paying that. Get rid of the rats, or we'll get rid of you.
Fine.
Now, counsellors, draw near, for I have an idea. A corking wheeze, I think you'll agree. If this piper fellow can get rid of the ratty clan, well, then we'll let him do it, but we'll just withhold the fee.
Oh, my word, what a crafty wheeze with ideas like these. It's no wonder he's the mayor instead of me.
And I really think you're far too kind.
It's positive inspired. I'll tell the man he's hired.
Always find
let's stoke up the fire and have him come along to set a
great.
What a clever mayor you are.
Thank you.
Pied Piper. I can bring joy with one breath. I can play the songs of new beginnings, or I can play the tune of death. The Pied Piper, I've done as you asked me to do. The rats have left town and they're all drowned, and now I've come back for what's due. Well, bring me their heads to prove that they're dead. That's not what we said. You're trying to swindle me. There's no more to say, and I will not pay. You've served your purpose and now be on your way. Send a message, tell everyone, the rats have all gone, and nothing, not one penny for today. Yes, sir, your wishes are command, and it's all in hand, and I can hardly stand, I'm so excited. We will have a ball, make it fair, good time for all, all the family is much, and jelly and cream, lots will be jolly. Well, I'd like to say, that's probably enough for a couple of all that should be stuff.
rats, and all free of charge. And I think that, by and large, why has everyone gone quiet?
So I hope you all enjoyed that as much as I did. It was a real treat talking to Peter. He's a great guy to talk to, and what a talented fellow he is. And I have another little thing to let you know what kind of guy Peter Jones is. Afterward, I didn't play this part for you guys. So, you know, I have to cut out some of the stuff. Sometimes we ramble on for, you know, a full hour or something like that. I can't play the entire interview. But a little later in the interview, I had asked Peter a few questions and mentioned that I had a little music project thing that I do as well. And he asked what it was called, and I told him it was called Novus, and that it was on Bandcamp, figuring he'd go and listen to a couple of the songs maybe and tell me, yeah, that's nice, you know, later. But I woke up the next morning, and Peter Jones had bought my album. I was just really kind of floored by that. It was a really great gesture on his part. So I wish him all the luck in the world. He's a great guy. Maybe we'll have him back on again when he releases another whimsical Tiger Moth Tales album somewhere down the road. It was a lot of fun talking to him, and I hope you guys did enjoy it. But as I said earlier, there are certain restrictions in the U.S. market here, and I am on one U.S. network, so I can't play too many songs by the same artist in the same show, so I couldn't just do an entire Peter Jones special at this point. You know, I was able to skirt around the rules with Simon Godfrey because he had been in Tiny Fish and Shineback, so he had some music under different names. But anyway, so I have room for one more, and I figure, you know what, Peter will probably enjoy this because I know he loves Genesis. Anyway, I guess we'll call this this week's classic feature. This will be from the seventh studio album by the band Genesis. the album A Trick of the Tail, one of my favorites from the band, actually. And I always appreciated how when their back was up against the wall, they delivered a killer. You know, they really put out when a lot of people were writing them off after the loss of Peter Gabriel. You know, some interesting tidbits about this album. The group wrote and rehearsed new songs during mid-75 and listened to about 400 audition tapes for a replacement frontman. They went into the studio in October with producer David Henschel to record the album without a definitive idea who was going to perform the lead vocals. Eventually, Phil Collins was persuaded to sing one song, and his performance was so strong that he sang lead on the rest of the album. And that song is Squonk.
We'll be right back.
So once again, that classic was Squonk from Genesis, A Trick of the Tail, their February 1976 release. And if you don't know, Squonk is based on the North American legend of a creature called the Squonk, which when captured will dissolve into a pool of tears.
Farewell and adieu to you fair Spanish ladies. Farewell and adieu, you ladies of Spain. For we've received orders for to sail back to Boston. And so nevermore shall we see you again.
So anyway, that is about all we have time for. I hope you enjoyed our feature on Tiger Moth Tales. And if you did, show him some love the way he showed me some love. Go buy his album. Buy either one. They're both fantastic. Cocoon from 2014 and Storytellers Part 1, 2015. The name of the project, Tiger Moth Tales, once again. And while on the subject of showing some love, you can always show the Big Squatch some love by checking out the Facebook page and giving it a like, prog-watch on Facebook, or following me on Twitter, at progsquatch, that's all one word, P-R-O-G-S-Q-U-A-T-C-H. Or you can email me and let me know what you think of the show, or give comments, suggestions, whatever. Progsquatch, once again, all one word, @gmail.com is my email address. And I also have been working on the website, progwatch.com. That's all one word, progwatch, progwatch.com. Check it out. I'm keeping this season current as I go along, and I've got a lot of season two in, and season one is complete. So if you're looking for any old back episodes, that's the place to go look for it, progwatch.com. So thanks once again for tuning in, and as I always implore you, prog on, brothers and sisters.
Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.